I'm Dan Cassidy, and this is UBS's Top of the Morning. Today, we turn our focus to the opportunities that exist within international equities and the considerations that investors should be mindful of. My guest joining us up here in the studio this morning is Investment Associate Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office, Mike Gord. So, Mike, great to be with you again, twice in as many weeks. So, welcome back.
Thanks, and glad to be back.
So, I know you and your colleagues, a couple of your colleagues, recently published a piece, Investment Strategy Insights, Investing in International Equity Markets. It's a primer. It's up now on UBS Online services. So just some context around what we'll be covering throughout the course of our conversation this morning. Though I know in the publication itself, you make the case that international equities are the same broad asset class as U.S. stocks, but have different attributes. So to kick things off, can you speak to what are some of the differences that you think investors should pay close attention to when investing abroad?
Yeah, absolutely. So like you said, international equities are essentially the same asset class as U.S. stocks, but there are key differences. And the biggest difference between U.S. equities and other markets is typically the regional sector weightings. So as an example, the tech sector in the U.S. or the S&P 500 has a weight of about 23% of the overall index. But if you look at the MSCI ACWI ex-U.S. index, which represents global stocks other than the U.S., it's only about 9%. So there's almost a 14% difference between those sector weightings. And that the effects of that will feed through to returns, risks, et cetera. Beyond sectors, another important difference is the geographic exposure of individual firms' revenues. So the S&P 500 is pretty domestically biased, with about 35% of revenues derived outside of the U.S. That number is actually much higher in other developed regions. The Eurozone has about 45% of revenues derived outside of the Eurozone. Japan's at about 50%. And the UK is very, very globally oriented, with about 70% of revenues derived outside of the market.
So, Mike, you had something else?
Yeah. I do want to just say one more important characteristic that we considered in this paper is the level of market concentration. So we looked at the market cap percentage of the top 10 firms in each country or region as a sort of a proxy for this. In the US, the top 10 make up less than 20%, and the same is true in Japan. However, other than those two, it's near or above 40% concentration for all other countries that we considered in this report. And this is important because markets with higher levels of concentration face additional idiosyncratic risks due to the large size of just a handful of firms.
And the publication is quite thorough. Again, it is up on UBS Online Services for our clients listening in who would like to read further into it. But Mike, when you consider a decade of strong equity outperformance for U.S. stocks, that relative to international equities, how do you think about returns on a going forward basis?
Yeah, so when we're looking at potential future returns across different markets, we look at three basic criteria. The first, relative performance cycles. Second, valuation. And third, dividends. Country and regional relative outperformance doesn't typically last more than a decade, though sustained outperformance or underperformance relative to the rest of the world is common for individual markets. So it is common to see something like emerging market stocks outperform the rest of global stocks over a 3-5 up to maybe a 10-year call it cycle, and then that tends to revert that pattern. And so in the paper, we actually use a pretty compelling example looking at emerging markets versus U.S. stocks over the last 30 years. And at different points in time over different about 5-year increments, one region will vastly outperform the other region in terms of hundreds of percentages of total return. That being said, over the last 30 years, the average annual returns for the two regions are very similar at 10.3% and 10.8%. So that you really have to try to look at those cycles. The second one was valuations. A typical measure when comparing regions is using the price to earnings ratio. But it's important to understand that most markets outside of the U.S. tend to have PEs that are a bit lower than the U.S. market. So this can lead to some confusion when comparing the different regions just on an apples to apples basis. And a good example of this is the Eurozone, which has had an average valuation discount of about 17-18% over the last 20 years to the U.S. valuation. So at first glance, if an investor sees that Eurozone equities price to earnings ratio is about 10% lower than US, they may think, oh, this is good value, these stocks are cheap. But when you actually look at what those historical patterns are for the valuations, those are actually relatively expensive. So that's an important consideration. And then the last aspect we touch on is dividends, which are typically higher outside of the US. This is really a function of companies' preferred method of returning capital to shareholders. In the US, the majority of return of capital comes through share buybacks. Outside of the US and most other developed markets, especially across Europe, the preferred method is dividends. And then the difference in dividend yields is also a reflection of sector differences in the different markets, with value defensive markets leaning towards paying higher dividends and growth and cyclical stocks lower dividends.
Okay, so Mike, that's very helpful color on how you look at returns, but with opportunity, of course, comes risks. So can you spend a few moments touching on the risks associated with international equities?
Yeah, sure. So in the paper, we look at a few different risk factors, volatilities, betas, correlations, and additional idiosyncratic risks. On the volatility side, most developed markets recently have experienced volatility in the roughly 15% range on an annualized basis. It's a bit higher up towards 20, 17, 18, 20% for emerging markets in aggregate. But there are a few select emerging market countries with much higher volatility. Looking back 5 years, Chinese equities have experienced volatility a little bit north of 20%, and Brazilian equities closer to 30%. So very volatile. Now, in terms of correlation and beta, these are important factors to consider when you're looking at international equities from a portfolio diversification standpoint. A market whose correlation to U.S. stocks is one isn't going to provide any of that protection on the downside because they're moving exactly in sync with U.S. stocks. So generally, lower correlations, better diversifiers. That being said, most international market correlations with the S&P 500 have been drifting higher recently. So the correlations used to run below 0.5 in the 90s, and now it's at about 0.7 to the 0.8 range recently. And then the last consideration that we look at is idiosyncratic risks. These can include anything from the current political regime, economic structure, strength of institutions, level of investor protections, debt levels, external geopolitical risks. Good examples of these risks in today's market are the ongoing Brexit and U.S.-China trade negotiations. They tend to dominate the headlines and dominate most big market swings.
So some of these risks our listeners are very familiar with.
Very familiar with.
Ample considerations to be mindful of. So thank you for walking us through those, Mike. I do want to talk about currencies a bit and how they impact international equity returns. Can you give us some key takeaways on how currencies can impact returns and risks for U.S.-based investors that may be less familiar investing in markets denominated in other currencies?
Yeah, absolutely. So earlier I had mentioned that individual countries or regions equity outperformance can last years or even a decade, but that doesn't typically last longer than that. And that same cycle trend is applicable to the currency markets, especially in relation to the US dollar. Over short time horizons, it's difficult to predict the direction of most currencies, but over longer time horizons, they tend to revert back to their fair value. And one of the measures that we look at to determine fair value of currencies is purchasing power parity. And by nearly all current estimates of PPP for the US dollar, they suggest that it's expensive relative to other currencies, meaning that it's more likely to mean revert and cheapen going forward than continue to gain value. Now, currencies can have a great impact on returns for US dollar-based investors. And in the paper, we give a pretty clear example with the comparing the IFA region returns in local currency versus returns in US dollars. So since 2013, they've only averaged about 6% annualized return in US dollar terms, but in local currency terms, that's over 12% a year. So more than double in those local currency terms. So clearly, these currency considerations, huge impact on returns that US investors will experience. Typically, safe haven currencies like the Japanese yen, the Swiss franc, these rally when equity markets fall. So that actually supports US dollar-based returns. But the opposite is true for EM currencies, which typically exacerbate, any US dollar-based investor losses in down markets. And this begs the question of whether US investors should hedge their currency exposure. And sadly, there's no simple yes or no answer. There's a cost to maintain a currency hedge. Investors have different tolerances for risk, including FX risk. And lastly, depending on where or how the exposure is positioned, an investor may want to hedge some exposure, but not others. Like they may want to hedge their exposure to EM currencies, but keep their Japanese equity exposure unhedged so that they can get the benefit of the yen's defensive qualities.
So, Mike, as I'm scrolling through the publication, I'm noticing towards the bottom, you do have one-page fact sheets included within, which report on individual countries and regions. You see Switzerland, Australia, India, among many others. Which of these markets does the Chief Investment Office like at this time?
So I'll separate this response into developed versus emerging markets. Sure. So within developed markets, we like the UK and Japan. The UK is likely to settle most of the Brexit uncertainty in the next couple months, and the market's been punished by international investors because of this uncertainty, so it's fairly cheap at the moment. Japanese equities, on the other hand, typically move in sync with global equities. Again, very, very globally exposed in terms of revenues. So they tend to move along with the rest of the world. But they haven't rallied to the same extent as other markets this year. So there's potential for further upside, especially if we get a positive catalyst for global growth, like a de-escalation on U.S.-China trade. Now, on the EM side, we like China and Brazil. A phase one deal's more likely than not in CIO's view over the next few months. So Chinese equities should get a pretty decent tailwind in the near term. And over the longer term, as Chinese markets increasingly open up to foreign investors, that's going to increase investor protections, liquidity, transparency, and you're going to get increasingly professional investors in the market. So that's definitely going to be a longer term structural tailwind for Chinese equities. Now on Brazil, it's an idiosyncratic story in Latin America. They recently passed meaningful pension reform, and they're set to pass further fiscal stimulus reforms and increase privatization of state-owned assets, all of which should continue to boost growth for the foreseeable future.
Okay, well, Mike, very insightful this morning, coming by and educating our listeners about the opportunities that exist within international equities, but also walking us through the risks to be mindful of as well. And the piece itself is substantial. Great read if you're traveling for the holidays or if you have some downtime as well. But Mike, really appreciate you joining us here in the studio as always, and we'll speak again soon.
Yes, glad to be back. Thanks, Dan.
And the piece, again, I do want to highlight up on UBS Online Services, Investment Strategy Insights, Investing in International Equity Markets, a primer. So that again is up on UBS Online Services. If you are a client of UBS, just simply reach out to your financial advisor can provide you with a copy of the publication directly. And Michael Gord, again, is an investment associate at Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office. A top of the morning. We'll be back again for you tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everyone.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.